Hey everyone, this is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and BikeJames.com, and welcome back to another Bike James podcast. Got a bunch of great stuff to talk to you guys about today. I'm going to talk about horizontal loading, which is something that I've been playing around a lot with, and how that can lead to better hip movement on the bike. Like, you know, what is horizontal loading, and then explain a little bit about how that it's going to help you move better on the bike. I'm going to talk about the difference between weight and pressure, and what this means for standing climbing specifically, and basically, in a nutshell, why you don't need to have your butt on the seat to get traction when you're climbing. In the bro science section, I found a study that compared functional threshold power versus intermittent power to predict cross-country race results, and some interesting stuff that I found in that study. Just want to share with you guys. And then in the equipment recommendation, another piece of equipment that I want to let you guys know about, the Angles 90, something I've been using for about a year now. And I just wanted to share a little bit more about that and how it can potentially help you with your training as well. So before we get into all that though, got a few things to take care of first. Definitely got to give a shout out to our sponsor, which of course is MTB Strength Training Systems, and also Pedaling Innovations with the Catalyst Pedal. Pedaling Innovations is my company that I created to introduce the Catalyst Pedal to the mountain biking world. The Catalyst Pedal is the world's first midfoot optimized pedal. It allows you to get pressure through the front end of the arch, the side of the foot, and the back end of the arch. You need those three strong pressure points into the pedal in order to have a strong functional foot. And so my insight into how small pedals, which didn't allow you to get those three points of contact with the foot and allow you to create good pressure through those three points of contact, and how that affected your movement and skills and stuff on the bike, that was what led to the idea behind the Catalyst Pedal. So if you're looking for something that will help you ride with more power and more confidence and with more comfort, and also comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, make sure you check out pedalinginnovations.com and the Catalyst Pedal. And of course, like I said, MTB Strength Training Systems and bikejames.com, where I've got a bunch of training programs and things that can help you with your riding and training as well. So moving on, I wanted to remind everybody as well about my Primal Skills Camp. It's coming up in September, September 21st and 22nd. I've got five riders that I got space open for. I've already sold a couple spots, so we've only got a few spots open. But basically, it's going to be a chance for me to get my hands on some riders and really dive deep into the things that I have been getting into over the last couple years, from the training side, the isometrics, the bands, the steel mace, on the skills training side, some of the new coaching cues and ideas that I've been working with to help simplify your skills. Because again, the whole idea is you can't think about step one, step two, step three on the trail. Things happen too fast. You have to be able to have, feeling really good. Technique feels a certain way. And so learning to focus on that feeling rather than trying to act out your technique is really the key to improving your skills, both in the short term and also in the long term. Because there's a big difference between going to a camp where they show you a few tricks that make you better at getting around the pump track and the parking lot, but aren't actually fundamentally sound things that allow you to continue to improve and progress after that as well. And so tying how you move off of the bike with how you move on the bike, and showing you how those two things relate to each other, and then specifically how you're able to improve your skills through improving your movement off of the bike and using these training tools and methods that I've been working with for the last couple of years to do that even more efficiently than some of the stuff that I have been doing in the recent past, or like I said, it's been a few years. But anyways, like I said, I'm really excited about this camp. and the chance to share this stuff with a few riders. We do have an early bird special. So if you sign up before the end of the month, you can get a free isometric training strap and a free pair of Catalyst pedals, which together is $149 value, which is almost half the price of the camp there. So yeah, check out bikejames.com/primal skills camp, and I'll have some links up and stuff like that so you guys can find out. Also want to remind everybody, through the Catalyst Training Center here, I do have some free workouts that I host on Tuesday mornings. I host a free workout here at 7:30. We do isometrics and mobility. Also, you know, throw in a little steel mace stuff here and there for fun. And then on Thursdays right now, which is actually this morning, just went on one of these this morning, is what I call the mace runs, which is a lot of fun. You know, we don't really run a lot. It's kind of a misnomer. It's just a, you know, catchy name, I guess. But we take a mace. There's a local watering hole around here that we run around, and we're playing with the maces, and then we're just looking for stuff, finding rocks to throw and trees to climb on and stumps to jump over and on top of and rocks to lift and hills to sprint up. We're just looking for fun movement challenges. It's really what it is. It's just playing. And so you're getting a hell of a workout, but it doesn't feel like it because you're just playing. And at the end, we jump in and take a quick dip to cool off. And it's a really great way to start a morning. And so if you are in the Fruta, Grand Junction, Colorado area, or you plan on visiting and you want to get in on those things, you can find out more at catalysttrainingfruta.com. That's the website for training center here, my facility here in Fruta. And so, yeah, you can find out more there. And then finally, just want to remind everybody, last week I sent out the, it was last week that I sent out the new workout of the month. And so if you haven't got that, and you're not signed up to my newsletter, you can go to bikejames.com and just sign up for the newsletter, and you will get a first workout. And then each month after that, the first week of the month, I send out a new workout. And in these workouts, I do incorporate some things like the isometrics and the steel mace. It's kind of a way to show people some of the different things that I've been working with. But I do include alternatives. So if you don't have those tools, you're not interested in that stuff, I do have alternatives for dumbbells and kettlebells and stuff like that in the workout. So again, I just want to just like sharing this stuff. You know, creating these workouts is, you know, really helps me stay sharp and think and systematize the stuff that I'm doing. So it's just great to get feedback from people on how the workouts are going. So if you have been doing the workout of the month, let me know what you think. If you got any suggestions, ideas, feedback, let me know, because these things are here for you guys as well. So that is it for kind of the housekeeping stuff. We can jump into our subjects now. And so the first one that we're going to talk about, our training segment, I guess, is horizontal loading. And horizontal loading is, I don't know if that's the right word or, you know, if there's actually a term for this. But what I've been doing is taking bands and like the big resistance bands, like people use them for assisted chin-ups, or you'll see people like power lifters, you know, we use them on like doing deadlifts and stuff to add weight at the top. But taking those bands and attaching them to the wall behind me, and obviously you got to, you know, attach it good, right? Don't just throw it into drywall with no anchor. You're going to get freaking smacked. But you get a good attachment point in the wall, and then you put the band around your hips, and your hips are where you fold, right? Like it's below your belly button, not around your belly button. It's below your hips, which is where you fold. And then having the, walking away and having the band pulling my hips back towards the wall. That's the way the resistance wants to pull my hips. And so what I found is that loading my hips this way is different than vertical loading. And you don't really think about this, but when you're lifting a weight off of the ground, that's vertical loading. You're lifting the weight up. And so your hips are not powering movement on a horizontal plane. It's not powering movement forward. It's powering movement up. So when you're doing a deadlift, you're not necessarily really fully training the hips to create movement forward. And so what I found is that by loading the hips horizontally, it creates a new demand. It's harder. Like the first few times you do it, you realize like, whoa, there is a difference between loading my hips horizontally and making them move front to back, and then loading them vertically and making them move up and down, like creating movement and pressure in those two planes is a different movement skill. And so doing regular exercises is great, but pretty much all of them are loading the hips and the body, or the hips especially in the lower body, through the vertical plane. And so even things like lunges and step ups, there's some horizontal movement because your base of support on a lunge, you step back. So your base of support's moving back, and which is around your hips. And then you step back up. And so your hips and base of support are moving forward. And so there is some horizontal movement with things like lunges. But things like squats, stagger stance squats, split squats, things where both feet are staying in a static position, you're pretty much just working up and down. You're working this vertical loading. And that's not the kind of movement that you want to create on the bike. On the bike, you want to create horizontal movement. You're wanting to drive your hips forward to create movement and pressure forward and movement and pressure back. It's not up. It's forward. And so, for example, this is one of the things that a lot of people struggle with jumping, is driving their hips forward into the jump. And it's basically, I've done a video on this. It's the difference between a vertical jump and a broad jump, right? Like a vertical jump where you're jumping as high as you can is different than a broad jump, right? A vertical jump is more of a squat where you're squatting down and then squatting back up. And then a broad jump is more of a hip hinge where your hips are swinging back and then swinging forward to drive your hips forward. And so these are two very different movement skills. And if you were to pick one of those two movement skills that mimics what we want on the bike, it's the broad jump. I'm not going to say there's never, like, you know, there's, you know, some up movement. It's more of a spectrum. Like, almost very rarely are you moving straight up on the bike. There's usually some sort of forward and back movement that you're wanting as well to shift your weight in order to drive the bike. And so without having something in your program that's working this horizontal loading, there's a gap. And like I said, this is what I found both with myself and the other riders that I've been training with this stuff, is that as soon as you throw a band around their hips and you have them trying to move in this horizontal plane, it's different. They struggle and they're not as good with it. And so again, like the one that a good basic exercise to do is your deadlift. Right? Like your hinge is a good one. What I like to do is a kneeling hinge. So you get down on your knees in a tall kneeling position, and then you do a hinge from there. So you push your butt back towards the wall. And the thing with the band that's really nice is the band, you get feedback. If you're moving your hips back, you can feel the tension in the band decrease. And so that tactile feedback really allows you to see, are you moving your hips back or are you just tipping over? Because tipping over can look like hinging, but that's not what we want. Basically, tipping over is where you fold over at the hips, right? Like you hinge over, but your butt's not sliding back. Your shoulders are coming down. And so you're tipping over. And that's, like I said, different than hinging. And so the band really allows you to get that feedback on if your hips are moving back. And then when you come back up, you drive the hips forward towards the wall in front of you. Again, now the band is loading you horizontally. And so you're having to drive the hips forward to come out of the movement. Instead of thinking up, you have to think forward. And that's what you want on the bike. You've got to get your hips moving forward, not up. And so, again, after seeing how much, like I said, myself and other riders struggled with that, I realized that without some sort of horizontal loading element, we're not really training that movement, that specific movement skill of the horizontal, you know, loading and unloading of the hips. And so, besides the kneeling hinge and the deadlift, doing something like a lunge, right? Put that thing around your waist and then do a reverse lunge. And you're going to see, like, when you go to step back up, that there's, it's a much different story stepping forward and really having to commit driving your hips forward to get both feet next to each other and your base of support back over your feet than it is standing up with a weight. And so, yeah, if you have those bands, encourage you to play around with that. If you, you know, just put them around your squat rack, if you have that, or, you know, find something that's really secure, cause you definitely don't want whatever it is that you have secured to coming out of the wall. But yeah, that horizontal loading, I think, is going to represent a, something new that in the next few years, we're going to be hearing a lot more about and will become a bigger part of mountain bike training, because again, that is way more specific to how your hips are moving than like a deadlift or something where the resistance is more up and down. And so something like a, an Indian club swing is, you know, cause you're having to project the energy front and back. You know, kettlebell swing to a little bit lesser degree. I don't like how the feet are so wide and it's really tough to keep good shoulder position. Ever since I found the Indian club swings, I've stopped doing kettlebell swings just because Indian club swings are a better version and I have access to them. If you don't have Indian clubs, the kettlebell swings again represent this forward and backward movement. So that's why, again, I've talked a lot about how that explosive hip hinge that the swing movement works, whether you're doing it with a kettlebell or you're doing it with Indian clubs or you're just doing a broad jump, right? It's just an explosive hip hinge where you're driving your hips forward and back and trying to project your weight forward instead of up. And so, so again, you know, just incorporating, making sure you're incorporating things like that, but that's a better way to load it, for you. And again, this is where you also have to look at training tools out there that are created for trying to help you with your hip hinge. And so again, there's a training tool out there that, you know, tries to mimic, doing the hip hinge on the bike. And, you know, it's a big, like, you know, rowing machine basically type thing. And if you look at the resistance, the way that the resistance is up and down. It's not front and to back. It's not a horizontally loaded, training tool. And so, you know, again, you can work your hinge on it, but you're working a vertically loaded hinge, like a deadlift, not a horizontally loaded hinge, like, you know, like, so like the banded, getting the band around the hips, or an Indian club swing, like an Indian club swing or a kettlebell swing, doing it properly is going to do way more for your hip movement because you're actually teaching your hips how to project, energy front and back, not up and down. So, you know, once you kind of understand how important the plane, right? Is it a vertical plane or is it a horizontal plane that we're trying to project energy? And, you know, that's very important. And so, you know, unfortunately there's a lot of, if you can make a lot of mistakes, if you don't understand which plane you're trying to project energy in with your sport. And so, for example, like a lot of people talk about the vertical jump as an example of why you need to push through the ball of your foot and why you need to be on the ball of your foot to land from a jump. Because from a vertical jump, you do, you know, drive through the ball of your foot and then land on the ball of your foot. But a broad jump, which again, we've already talked about, and I've demonstrated or talked about enough to convince you that the broad jump is more specific to the type of movement we want to create on the bike than the vertical jump, right? Where we want to project our hips forward, move our hips forward and back, not up and down. But if you look at a broad jump, you start with a flat midfoot position. You do drive through the ball of the foot, but what do you land on? What do you land on when you do a broad jump? You land on your heels. You don't land on the balls of your feet, right? So if you're trying to solve a vertical movement problem, you can come up with the wrong solution. because you don't want to be landing on the balls of your feet if you're trying to solve a horizontal movement problem. So, you know, when you do a broad jump, you land on the balls of your feet and then roll a ball of the foot down to get both the ball of the foot and the back of the heel down, or back of the arch down, so that you have good pressure so that now you can use your hips. That's what you want. Even the vertical jump, when the ankles are just simply guiding the heel down so that now you have good foot pressure and you can use your hips. So if you don't know what problem you're solving, you can come up with the wrong solution, and it makes sense until you realize you're solving the wrong problem. So just remember, guys, we are solving a horizontal movement problem on our bikes with our hips, not a vertical one. So make sure we're paying attention to that when we're looking at potential solutions and ways to improve that. So with that said, it's kind of a good segue to our skills section of the podcast, because the problem of solving the wrong problem is also at the heart of what I want to talk about with this as well. And what I mean by that is the question, I guess, kind of the thing I want to talk about is the difference between weight and pressure. And they're related, but they're not the same thing. And if you're trying to solve a weight problem when you have a pressure problem, you can come up with some wrong solutions. And we're going to talk about standing climbing specifically here, but one of my big realizations in the last year or so is that a lot of the skills training advice that people are getting is coming from trying to solve the wrong problem. People are looking at weight on their bike, weight on their hands, weight on their feet, weight on the front or back tire, when it's not a weight problem, it's a pressure problem. It's about pressure at the hands, pressure at the feet, pressure at the front, on the front tire or back tire. And weight is part of that, but they're not the same thing. So the example I like to use to help people kind of visualize this is a truck stuck in the sand. And so if you ever got a truck stuck in the sand, then you know that the solution is you got to put some more weight on the back end. And so you get people to stand on the back end. If that doesn't do it, right? If you have people standing on the back end to add some more weight and you're still not getting what you need, what do? They start bouncing. They start jumping up and down. And that bouncing oftentimes gets the pressure that allows the traction for the truck to get out of the stuck situation. I mean, I know because I had this happen to me in Hawaii a couple years ago. I made a dumbass mistake of going somewhere I shouldn't have and got stuck in the sand. And that was part of what we had to do, was get people on the back end. We didn't have very many people, so we had to start jumping and getting that pressure going. So if weight was the problem, then we would have to find more people. We would have to find more weight to put in the back end. But weight can actually start to cause its own problems, right? Like you can get too much weight in the back end, and now that starts to cause issues with traction as well. And so pressure is active weight, right? Like when you're on the back end of the truck and you're jumping up and down, the weight of the truck hasn't changed. But now there's pressure as you are pushing down and the weight is driving down. It creates more pressure at the contact patch. And really what you're looking for is a weight to pressure ratio. If you don't have enough of, you know, too much weight, no good, not enough weight, like not enough pressure. Like, I don't know if you can have too much pressure, right? Like, but anyways, the thing is, it comes down to a weight to pressure ratio. And when you get the right weight to pressure ratio, you have optimum traction. And so that is what we are trying to solve on the bike, especially with climbing, right? And so when people, one of the biggest myths in mountain biking or cycling in general is that you need to keep your butt on the seat in order to keep traction on the rear wheel. And again, the idea is that when you've got your butt on your seat, you've got more weight on the bike, on the rear end of the bike, and that that extra weight is going to help you maintain traction. So again, if weight was the problem, that would make sense. Although I've already demonstrated, I've got another post on my blog where I use my bad stick figure drawings to show you how once you start climbing, any weight that you're putting into the bike through your seat is not going down into the tire. The only way that you can, you know, as you have weight, that weight gets transferred into the bike through the seat tube. And so when you're on level ground, the seat tube is basically pointing down. You know, there's an angle, but it for the most part, it's pointing down. And so the weight is now going in the same direction as your pressure, your contact patch with the rear tire. As soon as you start climbing and the front wheel comes up, the contact patch continues to be down, right? Like gravity is That's what you're trying to use is where it's going to dictate what direction the contact patch is. So it continues to point straight down. But as you go up, your seat tube stops pointing down and starts to point forward into the hill in front of you. And so now the angle from the weight going into the bike is now forward. It's not down. And so that's why if you try to keep your butt on the seat, you'll see people creep forward and get their, they'll basically sit on the nose of the bike and they'll get their crotch sitting on the nose of the bike. And it's because now with their weight, their butt in that position, now they can use their weight to push down, because weight being pushed in to the seat at this point is worthless, right? It's not, you're not pushing it in the same direction. You're not creating pressure and pushing in the same direction your contact patch is. The contact patch is pointing down. And so you get your butt, you move your butt forward and on top of the seat, and now you can create pressure and use your weight to press down. So again, if weight was the problem, you would keep your butt flush against the seat. You would not feel the need to have to shift your butt forward and start, you know, basically balancing your crotch on the tip of the nose of your seat. And so, you know, that right there, I mean, we've all seen or experienced this at some point. And so what you're trying to do is get your weight in a position to be able to create downward pressure. It's pressing down, using your weight to create pressure down that is creating the traction that we want. And so you don't need the seat. If you were to move the seat out of the way, your butt would be your butt stays in the exact same position as it was. You would find that you're able to create that pressure just as well, if not better, at this point, because now you don't have the seat in between you and the contact patch. Like, you're able to use your weight directly into the pressure, create pressure directly into the contact patch. And you can move your butt around. You having your butt on the nose of the seat is the general area of where you need your weight to create downward pressure, but that may not be the optimum area. You may want to have your butt a little bit different space, and that would be a more efficient place for you to create downward pressure. So if you're trying to keep your butt on the seat, then you may not actually have your hips in the best place to create that downward pressure that you need. And so, that's basically it. Like, once you understand that it's pressure into the contact patch that you're trying to create, and you need your weight in a specific spot to do that, but it just happens that that place is where your seat is when you start to climb. So it's a coincidence. It's not a cause. And again, like I said, the fact that you have to shift your weight forward and on top of the seat, basically perching on the nose of the seat, that is, again, like if it was weight, you would keep your butt on the seat. but it's pressure. Your body knows that, and it has to move in order to create downward pressure when you start climbing. So you don't need your butt on the seat to create good traction. In fact, when you stand up and you shift your weight forward and you're able to take some weight off of the back wheel, remember we were talking earlier about it's about weight to pressure ratio. So if your weight is too far back when it doesn't need to be, you may have too much weight on the rear wheel. You may actually be losing traction because you have too much weight on the rear wheel and your pressure to weight ratio is off. And it's not about a matter of more weight and more weight, right? That's like I said, like going back to the example of the truck, you can put too many people in the back of the truck and it creates its own problem. And then you keep trying to solve it by piling more people in the truck. You're never going to get out of that spot. So too much weight causes its own problems as much, just like not enough weight can cause problems. So get away from the idea that you need weight on the rear wheel, think about pressure instead, and then think about using your hips and your weight moving around the cockpit in order to create and help create the best pressure to weight ratio and get your hips where they need to be to create pressure optimally. And so you'll find that the climbing your climbing is going to be much better. Because the other thing is when your butt's on the seat, you can't use skills, right? You can't use front and back weight shifts to help yourself maneuver through sections of trail. You're pretty much stuck. Your hips are literally stuck in one place. And so that's not the most efficient way to try to pedal up, especially technical stuff. Again, I'm actually going to be posting a video next week, I think, going over, there's a spot, anyone who's ridden the Mary's Loop Trails in Fruita will recognize this feature immediately, but it's a slight uphill grade, and then there is about a 12-inch high ledge that you've got to get your front wheel up and over. And it's another one of these things that you can see where people are creating go-arounds. The vast majority of people just walk it. And the reason is because people try to ride it sitting down. Like you're not going to be able to do it sitting down. You have to be able to stand up and stand up and ride up to it. Like that's the other thing, is you see people sitting down and riding up to it. And then when they're like a foot or two away from it, they try to stand up to do the weight shifts and all of that stuff. And it's too late. You're not in a balanced position. You need to be able to stand up and ride up to the feature and then use your skills to get up and over it. There's no skills with your butt on the seat. Your butt on the seat is a boring position. You cannot use your skills in any way, shape, or form. So, you know, you're taking away one of your most valuable tools for climbing, which is your weight shifts, as well. So not only do you not need your butt on the seat, but it is actually taking away from your ability to climb efficiently and create good pressure to weight ratios and optimize your traction. So, anyways, hopefully this at least gets you curious and thinking about it. Next time you're out on the trail, you're thinking about this pressure, creating pressure into the rear wheel or into the ground through the rear wheel in order to create traction, and that's the idea and that's what we want to go for. So anyways, there you go. Got some other things we'll be talking about where pressure versus weight, because again, people think, you know, weighting the outside foot in corners when it's pressure that we want. People talk about don't put weight on your hands, but we need pressure on, you know, through the palms to into the bar, and you need weight in order to create pressure. So if you have no weight on your hands, how can you create pressure into the handlebars? And if you can't create pressure into the handlebars, how can you control the bike? So again, if you're trying to solve weight problems when pressure is the problem, you're going to come up with less than optimal solutions for them. So anyways, just some fuel for thought for you there. So moving on to the bro science. The bro science this week, or this month, this podcast, was a study that looked at functional threshold power versus intermittent power to predict cross-country race results. And basically the reason this kind of caught my eye is this functional threshold power, FTP. This is a buzzword. This is a hot thing for people who are really into cardio training and you know, increasing your functional threshold power is a big goal. And so a lot of training programs out there are, are for that purpose, increasing your functional threshold power. And where this came from is when you look at roadies, like really good high level road cyclists, and you test them, you find out that they have higher functional threshold power than average riders. And so the logic goes, well, then if we train our functional threshold power, elite riders have high functional threshold power. So if I train to raise my functional threshold power, that will make me more of an elite rider. That's the logic, right? And so it's a little backwards. You know, I'm not necessarily going to get into, you know, the flaws, because what happens is there's something that you create to help measure something, and then training for that test. There's a test that is a predictor of a skill, but people turn the test into the skill and they start training for the test and forgetting, like, well, what was the actual skill that we were working on? And so sometimes they line up, but sometimes they don't. Again, make sure you're solving the right problem, people. That's really kind of the reoccurring theme with this podcast, it seems. So functional threshold power, the way that they determined that was to have them ride at for 20 minutes, basically as hard as they could. Okay, and so that is a good way to test where your functional threshold power is. And the intermittent power is 20 minutes of 45 seconds work with 15 seconds rest. So it's basically 20 minutes of interval. So what you're looking at is a 20-minute kind of steady state, really, really hard effort versus 20 minutes of intervals. Right. And so what they were looking at is which one of these two things was a better predictor of cross-country race results, the functional threshold power or the intermittent power. And what they found was that the intermittent power was a much better predictor of race results than the functional threshold power. And that makes sense, because I've talked about this. When I first started talking about interval trainings for mountain biking back in, you know, like 2005, 2006, and it was the whole idea was like, man, you go on a trail ride, you can't, it's not a steady state sport. It is a interval sport. It's hard and easy efforts interspersed. And so it's not like running a long distance or being a road rider and riding for a long distance. Those are different things. And so mountain biking is much more of a strength and power endurance sport than a classical endurance sport. And so your classical endurance sports, your functional threshold power is very important. Like, how hard your functional threshold power basically lines up with, like, your lactate threshold. Like, where's that point where you're starting to redline? And because when you start to redline, you go into the red line, like, now you're incurring, you know, you're using up energy faster, you're incurring a lot of metabolic costs because you're going more anaerobic. And so your ability to, the harder you can go before you actually redline and go full anaerobic, the better, especially for an endurance, a classical endurance sport where you're basically, where you're able to hold a steady state for a long period of time. But that's not, like I said, what happens with mountain biking. And so training programs that train you to increase your functional threshold power are not training you for mountain biking. They are not training you for the specific demands of trail riding. And so I'm not saying that there's no place for a steady state, longer type rides in your program. Like I said, it kind of goes back to what I was talking about earlier, where people confuse the test with the skill. And this is why functional threshold power has become a buzzword, is because, again, it's something that you can look at. Hey, the skill of being a high level road cyclist, They have high functional threshold. It's just a test, right? So training for that test doesn't necessarily ensure that you're going to become more like those elite riders. It's a decent probability. But it's not the same thing. But then you end up with programs, like I said, that are basically training you for the test. And so if you're following programs that are training for the test of increasing your functional threshold power, just know that they're not helping to increase your endurance for mountain biking. And this is also why I tell people that the best cardio training that you can do for mountain biking is riding your mountain bike, because it's really tough to simulate what we do on the trail through cardio workouts. Because again, it's not just pedaling our bike. That's another thing that the study looked at, and they found that 25% of the time the cross country racers either weren't pedaling or were in like what was considered like a recovery effort zone. And so there's a lot more going on the bike than just pedaling. And so even though intervals can be a step in the right direction, that they're still a little incomplete because you're missing some of these other elements. And the only way that you can really simulate those elements is to ride your bike and get out and go for a trail ride. So, doing that instead of focusing on cardio training. And again, the problem is you do a lot of cardio training, it makes you tired. And so now you can't go out for trail rides. And it's this backwards thing, right? Like if you can't go for a trail ride because you've got a cardio workout, or you go for a trail ride and you're a little spent because you did a cardio workout the previous day, I would argue that those cardio workouts are not actually helping you and benefiting you in the quest of becoming a better mountain biker. Because the idea is not to become a better test taker, right? You don't want to increase you want to become a better mountain biker. And a side effect of that is that some of these test scores and things that they can test will increase as well. But if you focus on just becoming a better test taker, you can miss the point of becoming a better mountain biker. So again, just keep that in mind when you are looking at your next program. So the last thing I wanted to go over or just kind of share with you guys to finish out here is a piece of equipment that I've been using. I guess it's been about a year now that I've been using it. It's called the Angles 90. And you can look it up, angles90.com. Just do a Google search for it. But it's basically some handles with a nylon strap that goes through it. And it allows you can hang them from a chin-up bar. And it allows you to rotate your hands as you're doing your pull-ups. And so instead of having a fixed bar where your hands are just, either palms forward or palms back and your hands stay in the same position, that's actually a pretty unnatural movement. Like when we're rowing and pulling something in towards us, there's a natural turning motion of the hand, and that turning and screwing motion puts less stress on the elbows and helps recruit more muscles. And it's just a more natural movement. And so I got the tool because I've got arthritis in my elbows from just too many crashes on my mountain bikes and some other things. And so doing regular chin-ups and pull-ups where my hands are in a fixed position is really uncomfortable, like borderline, I can't do them. And so the Angles 90 allows me to do my pull-ups and chin-ups. And because I'm able to rotate my hands and get that natural movement, they feel much better. And I'm able to do my pull-up / chin-up again. And, it's good because you have the hands facing away. You start in kind of like a pull-up position. And as you come up, the hands rotate. So you're ending in the chin-up position. So you're kind of getting the best of both of those movements. And another thing that I like for it is doing deadlifts, especially barbell deadlifts. And the reason that I like doing it is because at the top of the movement, you have the handles around the bar. So when you get to the top, you are able to pull your hands next to you. And so the weight, you're kind of centered a little bit more between the weight than having all of the weight in front of you. And so the trap bar, one of the reasons that people like to use the trap bar, well, one of the main reasons is they can't do a hip hinge. They squat it and their shins are pushed too far forward. And so instead of teaching people how to do a good hip hinge, coaches just use the trap bar because it's easier. But you're not, anyways. Another reason is because people like to use it is because it's safer and it feels like it's putting less strain on your lower back. And so the problem with the trap bar is because there's no bar in front of you, you can get away with a big knee bend in the beginning. You don't have to hinge. With a barbell in front of you, you can't push your shins forward past a certain point. And so you have to push the hips back. Whereas with the trap bar, that bar's not there. You can just keep pushing the shins forward and get down into a squatty position and stand up with the bar. Remember, a deadlift is not just picking a weight up off of the ground. It's supposed to be practicing a hip hinge. And a hip hinge is minimal knee bend, maximal hip hinge or maximal hip bend. And so that's kind of the downfall, in my opinion, of the trap bar is it allows people who don't know how to, or, you know, it doesn't force people to get into a good hinge position at the bottom. But with the angles 90, because the barbell is in front of you, you have to get into that good hinge position. And as you come up, because you're able to pull your hands next to you, now at the top, you're in between the weights. So you kind of have that safety aspect of the trap bar. So you're getting the best of both worlds there as well with the good position that you're forced into at the bottom with a barbell, but the safety of being in between the weight, having your hands more next to you rather than in front of you. And again, you can rotate your hands as you come up. So as you come up, you're able to rotate your hands so your palms face out, which helps lock your shoulders into place, helps get you in a better postural position. And like I said, it pulls the hands in more to the side. So now you're between your hands instead of having your hands out in front of you. And again, a much better way, in my opinion, to do your deadlift. So anyways, it's a cool piece of equipment. I think it's like $45 or something like that. Go check them out. Good addition to your toolbox if you're looking for a new toy to play around with. Or like I said, if you have issues with your elbows or wrists or anything like that doing regular pull-ups and chin-ups, give these guys a shot, because I'll bet that they'll feel much better using the angles 90. Anyway, so that's it for today, guys. That's all I got on the agenda. So I'm going to wrap it up. Enjoyed sharing this info with you guys. Again, remember to visit pedalinginnovations.com to learn more about the Catalyst pedal. Because again, remember, pressure is the problem. And the problem that you're trying to solve with your foot is keeping good pressure between your foot and the pedal. And you have to have those three contact points of pressure, the ball of the foot, the outside edge of the foot, and the heel, or the back end of the arch. And if you have those three pressure points with your, you know, of contact, and you're able to apply pressure into those three points, you're going to have a strong, balanced, stable foot. Because that's exactly how your foot wants to function when you're standing on the ground. And so that's what we're what you want to simulate with your pedal as well. And also remember to visit bikejames.com where you can sign up. I got a bunch of free stuff you can sign up for there. A lot of free training tips. I also have some programs and things. I'm looking at a new site redesign. By the time this comes out, I don't think the new site design will be up yet, but it'll be out in the next few weeks. And so excited about that. Hopefully it'll just kind of help people find what is going to help them even easier, because I got a lot of different stuff, even a lot of different, you know, free workouts and things. And so just trying to organize it for people and make it easier to figure out what's going to help them out. So that's about it. Enjoyed doing this podcast as always. If you guys got any questions or comments or things you want to me to cover on a future podcast, or just subjects you want to see me cover on the blog or whatever, hit me up at james@bikejames.com. I'm always happy to help. And go get out on a ride, and I'll talk to everybody next time.